For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjor, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, welcome to the party, pals. It is Shift and Steer, episode Big Block. Big block Chevy, 427, just like a Corvette, you know, high cubic inches, big. It's not an LS motor. It's traditional Chevrolet. So it's going to be a lot of torque today. A lot of torque happening. Torque talk here on Shift and Steer. Hey, we just came off. What's that, Aaron?
I was going to say Brad's a couple days older, so are his jokes.
Yeah, that's right. They're from a bygone era of big block Chevys. So, and it's tough turning 50, you know, when you turn 50, you got to stop and take stock of everything. But,
Wait, do you remember turning 50?
Yeah. So anyways, hey, thanks for everyone for reaching out though. It was really awesome. I had lots of people from all around the globe. And, what's funny is that, when you start getting them the day in advance from like Japan and things like that, that's kind of but thanks again. And, hey, before we get into, what just happened today, Aaron just got, off the high seas, on the pirate ship. Aaron, I went out to dinner for my birthday, with, Mikey and Sue, and they told me all about, the whole rock and roll ship and everything that your dad and Mikey played with everybody and everybody else that was on. But, He didn't know how many people were on that ship. Do you have any idea what the number of fans that were on that ship that bought tickets?
I think the number was somewhere around 4,500.
Okay, because I looked up that the ship was capable of like 6,200.
Wow. Yeah, I think it was 4,500 and like 1,600 crew members. So that's about right. It was a lot of fun. You know, that these all-inclusive trips are really interesting, because it's like you see, you know, 60 and 70 plus year old people wearing, you know, rock and roll shirts that you're just like, really, like, that's your demographic? You know, it's kind of unusual. You forget that they were young.
At one time, they were in their 20s. Okay?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but it's so cool because, you know, it's everybody's like-minded and everybody's really cool. And the first day or two, they're so excited. They're like, you know, they're shaking when they talk to you and it's all, you know, they're all freaking out. And then by day three, they're like, hey, you know, thanks, you know, blah, blah. And then by day four, they're like, yeah, what's up? And they just keep walking. You know, it's like,
yeah, I'm ready to get off the boat.
It's just that everybody's accessible. And it's just really nice because, you know, you walk around the ship and you shake hands, you take pictures, sign autographs, give hugs. And it's like that every day. It's like being in a giant dormitory. It's fun. It's wild. It was great. But there was a Morgan. There was a Morgan plus eight, like down in where all the restaurants and retail stores are, like down at the bottom of the ship.
Oh, really?
There was a car just sitting in the hallway, not for sale, just on display. And I'm like, a blue Morgan plus eight. Like, it was really
bizarre. Yeah. You should have just taken it for a spin.
Yeah, right. But it's like,
I was blown away by the stages, dude. I mean, that,
yeah.
You think of a ship. I know it's big, and I know these are floating worlds now, but Mikey and Billy sent me photos, and I was like, your dad and Mike were on that indoor one, and I didn't know at the time until I went to dinner with Mike, found out how they switch around, different show each day, and then Billy sends me one outside, like on the main deck, and that looks like a regular concert stage, man.
Yeah. The showrooms are really nice, and the sound is really good. I saw Billy on the last day because Matt Sorum was playing with him too, and Matt's a good buddy of ours. So, and that was almost like a discotheque room with LED lights blinking everywhere and screens everywhere, and it was more like an ice skate rink, kind of an oval. To where the other showroom that Deb played in the first night is big. It's just like a classic theater, grand theater. And we played there in 2018 as a family, which was pretty cool. My brother and I opened it was my brother opened and I joined him, but, it was super cool. And then the outdoor one is up on the top deck and, it's facing the wind. So on a good day, you lean forward, got your foot on the monitor and your hair is going, what hair you have left is going in the wind, and every shot looks like a power shot. It's really fun. And if it's cold and foggy, then you're like, frozen in that position. But the sound was really good. And all the shows, each dad played three shows with the circle with Mikey and Vic and Jason Bonham. And the first show inside was really cool. It was a live rehearsal and it was great. The second show was like real soulful. I cut a little video together of the last song.
I saw that.
In black and white. The dad, it was really sweet because dad messaged me late at night. He said, "Hey, did you get any footage tonight?" I said, "I just shot some stuff off my phone." He goes, "Was there any magic?" And I said, "Yeah, it was a magical set." He goes, "Send me 30 seconds of magic." And I sent him 50. and then the third show was like powerful. Like they stepped out on stage. Vic played one note. Jason hit the kick and it was like, oh yeah, it's on. And it was good. So I got to say, it was fun. Everybody did
great. Get to play any tunes?
No. Dad brought me up for my birthday just to give me shit and forget my age. But other than that.
Tell you were 73.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Now, this was about the circle and they have a very specific set. And there really isn't any room for me as a guest. But dad's voice was on, man, that the third show, it really was on. And I tell you, the guy is 76 and he can still wail like anyone.
It's amazing. So. Yeah. He is amazing. Yeah. It's just yeah. crazy. And then Mikey told me that he went and did a set with Billy.
Yeah.
And
he jumped up with them and on the big outdoor stage.
Yeah. What's funny is that Matt Sorum put up a post. I don't know if anyone else saw it, but he said, and it was so typical Billy Gibbons, because he said, when we were getting ready for this, he goes, "I got a hold of Billy and we spent 5 minutes talking about what our set list would be and 45 minutes, what Billy wanted us all to wear." and so they every day they put up shots of what Billy had, which were these studded outfits, that were really dramatic and crazy. And then Michael shows up to play the set with them, and he's telling us at dinner. He goes, "I show up and I walk in there, and I'm in board shorts. I got a T-shirt on." He goes, "Typical Mikey, you know." And he goes, "Billy hands me these studded black shoes." He goes, I have flip-flops on." And I'm like, "Well, thanks, Billy, but I'm not going to wear those with these board shorts." And he goes, "I want to look like a goof, you know."
Yeah, Mikey's got huge feet. So how did they even know what size?
I have no idea, but he brought them home. He said, "I got a pair of studded shoes. But it was just, it looked like a great time. You guys must have had a really good fun.
Well, on that note, if you don't mind me complimenting Billy, I haven't seen him play live probably since the old ZZ Top days. I like the band. I'm just, I just don't go to see them. Yeah. And I got to say, Misha, my wife, folks, she's never seen them perform. She just knows Billy from the car world, right? And so she's never seen his musical side. And she's like, you know, he, in person, he can be very frail looking, and he's just, mm-hmm. he's this little tiny man.
He's very thin.
He's very petite and getting in his years. And that's the man Misha knows, you know, as we kind of help him down the stairs and dust him off a little bit, you know, and here he is on stage, and she's like, he's not really singing, is he? I'm like, oh yeah, yeah. He's like, is he really playing too? I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's doing his little moves, and she's like, this is a totally different man. I'm like, I know, it's kind of weird, huh? And he was great. The bass player, I don't know who the other guitar / bass player is. They have these multi axes where it's like the guitar is also the bass, and they just flip a switch. It's really cool. And they switch on and off, and you have to really watch the notes they're playing to know who's playing what. It's absolute genius. And Matt is killing it back there on drums, but it's just the trio. And like you said, their outfits are just, they all match down to the shoes. Their hats are all different. They're all wearing their own character hat, but everything else is the same. And it's so fun, but the show is fantastic, folks. If Billy's playing anywhere with these guys, you got to go see him, because it's really good. It's nostalgic, but in a weird way, it's still modern. And they've got a lot of, you know, auto-tuning and weird effects on Billy's voice, but he's got such a character voice anyway. You add that to it, and it just elevates the show in a very kind of quirky way.
Yeah, he belts it's it out, great. Man.
He does. He's great. I got chills. Look, he's great. I was really impressed. Impressed.
Know, yeah. I think
and Misha was just blown away. Like, she was watching his mouth to see if he's talking. I'm like, he's right up against the mic. You're not going to see his mouth, but trust me, watch his chest. He's talking. He's singing.
Yeah, they played the SEMA Gala a handful of years ago. Brad, you helped
I missed
quarterback that.
That
deal, and it was Mikey and Billy. I don't know who else was up there with them.
Well, we were supposed to have Jeff Beck, but he was a no show, and then we had Jimmy Vaughn. Okay. And then the keyboardist is really famous, and I'm forgetting his name. I apologize, but it was great. We put that all together, and he does a great
show.
That
was a fun set. You're right, Aaron. Now it just feels like it's muscle memory. It just kind of goes up.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And, you know, and for a long time, people were saying that about like Ozzy Osbourne as well, who seems like he can't hold himself up, unfortunately. But when he was on stage, he's still just sort of, it's dude, like a wind up doll. Like somebody just kind of twists the little wind up and he keeps going. And
that's a little of Paul Newman, right? Too. They had to, you know, crane him into the car, and then he won championships, and then they crane him out of the car.
You talk about Ozzy. That guy was, I was backstage at one of his concerts 10 years ago, maybe. And he was like, he looked like he had Parkinson's or something.
Yeah,
like,
he does.
He's going up on stage, and he was sitting there, and Sharon was doing all the talking and everything. And all of a sudden, they do the intro, and they help him up the stairs. The second he was on the mic, entirely different.
Trippy, huh?
Rocking. I'm really, like, really what? Trippy. And then as soon as he came off stage, we were like, are they doing a switcheroo here or what?
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
they plug him in too.
It makes you wonder if it's a playback, but then you kind of can tell that it's not like there's
those guys, it's real.
For old school, they still sing it all live.
But you know, you brought up the bass that Billy uses, and he showed me that once when I was up at his house, and I was like, what? Because he's like sitting there playing, and then all of a sudden he can switch it, and it becomes a bass, and I'm like, and how do you even keep that, you know, because your fingers are doing one thing, then they got to do a whole different thing. It's amazing. It's just,
well, guys, I got to say that I only saw the first half of the show because I had to go and see Dad because I was filming that. But I was really impressed, man. I was really impressed that the show was flawless and seamless. And you know, you're talking three seasoned guys. I wish I knew his other bandmate's name, because he had a lot of presence too, and he was really good. And they're great. Go see him, guys.
I'm surprised the guys don't just sit around talking about cars the whole time, because they're all such car guys.
Actually, Mikey told me that him and Billy were talking about cars backstage. He goes, Billy was just, hey man, so what about this hot rod and that hot rod? And he goes, we were just talking about everything. So, hey, speaking of hot rods, we had a hot rod that was up on Bring a Trailer today, Mr. Matt
Yes.
Motorator had his SAC Mustang. We talked about it last week, if you remember. And it ended just as we record this about an hour and a half ago. So, Matt, give us the lowdown.
You know, I don't want to bury the lead. It was a no sale. It got up to 73,000. We wanted a little bit more from that. Kind of an interesting auction. We've done these a few times. If you go to my profile on Bring a Trailer, you'll see I've sold a number of cars for some friends and some of my stuff. So sometimes at the end, it gets pretty active. And then sometimes it's surprisingly stagnant. And we get a few bids at the end, but it didn't quite meet the reserve. And it's one of those things where it's like, yes, I wanted to sell it and put that money into Bravago, into the company. But also I didn't like really want to get rid of the car, so, but I priced it fairly. It didn't quite meet it. And now the weird thing is the auction ends, a couple people reach out to me and they're going, "Hey, we got close. Let's make a deal." And their offers are pretty fair offers and a pretty significant jump. It's like it got bid to 73,000. It's not like guys reached out and said, "I'll give you 74,000 for it," or even 75,000. Like, they offered something more significant, and I appreciate it. And maybe there can be a deal to be done in the next couple of days. But I was like, "Why don't you just bid?" Like,
yeah, just bid it and be done.
Just bid it. Like,
I don't want to pay the fees.
I mean, I guess there's a little bit of that. So Bring a Trailer, unless it's changed, but it's always been 5% up to 5,000 max, right? So, you know, I guess if they want to save a couple of grand and throw that into the purchase price, then, you know, after the fact, I guess you could do it that way. And I'd much rather have that money, but it's just kind of a weird thing. It's just like, yeah, You guys were willing to go more. Why didn't anybody bid to go more on it? I don't know.
Matt, that's pretty easy. Their wives walked in the room.
a lot of guys comment, you know, like, what happened to this auction? Guys like, potential divorce. My kids are in education.
Matt, I can tell you why. And it's because there's not an open bar at their house. Okay.
Right.
Like at the auctions, you know, where what you needed to do was figure out somehow to have like Drizzly or somebody, once they actually bid, a case of Bravago is actually delivered, chilled and ready to go.
I would, you know what? It's funny you mentioned that, Brad. I would propose, I want to do this now. I can't do it with this car and I don't have another thing to sell, but I'm going to propose the next time I sell a car on Bring a Trailer, I'm going to send out a Zoom link and invite everybody on a Zoom link, bidders and commenters. And
that would be fun.
Let's all have a drink and let's do it live.
You may be onto something there, Matt.
Yeah. I'm 100% down for that. And I know Zoom can, you know, it's not going to be the best quality when you start adding more than 4 or 5 people, but I wouldn't mind getting 20, 30 people on the screen and going,
let's do this.
Let's chat. Ask me some questions. Let's have some cocktails. We'll make it fun. We'll make it like a requirement. Like, you got to be drunk.
Yeah. No, what you do is you go, "Hey, come on, we're going to do a shot." Yeah. All right, now we're going to do another one.
Yeah, everyone has to drink Bravago.
And then some guy will be going, "I want to bid on your car, but all my bandwidth is gone for the Zoom."
So that would be really cool, Matt. That's a really good idea, because that personal live interaction with video and audio, I think would really elevate the sale. That's a really good idea.
You just do it like the last 30, 40 minutes of the auction, right? Just get everybody on board.
Matt, I should say this off the air, but start a host company service. I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
Like that's a thing. That's badass.
No, it's no different than, you know, when I've sold cars at Barrett Jackson and you hang out in the staging lines by the car so that people, when that final time, they can come up and ask questions.
Yeah.
And so many people forget about that. They don't, you know, and
anyway, that being said, with this car, I don't think I had it priced unfairly. There was obviously a very low mile, like wrapper car that was on Mecum with like 190 miles or something that went for $134,000. And then one of the SAC prototype cars went for 61,000, but it had 55,000 miles on it. So somewhere between 55,000 miles and 200 miles, there's this, you know, $60,000 and 130 something thousand dollar spread. So my car having 3,631 miles, I think is kind of fits into, you know, the, you know, somewhere in the 80 to 100 range.
With, so having, oh yeah.
No, I was which brings say, up probably a really good thing point either. Because you said 3,300 miles approximately what your car had on it?
Yeah, 36, okay. Yeah.
See, 36 is a real amount where if you are buying a really rare collector car of some nature, you could still put a few miles on it, take it to some shows, where if you buy a car with 14 original miles, 20 original miles, any mileage you put on it is automatically drastically devaluating that car.
You can't even roll that car around your shop. You have to put it on dollies.
Yeah. Right?
Like, which is kind of brings up this topic I wanted to pick your brain on, you guys, is are we getting way ahead of ourselves on the value of low mile cars? On Bring a Trailer, there was just recently, like this past week, an 89 Chevy Camaro IROC, the IROC Z coupe. It's a cool 80s, 90s-ish style car, 440 miles on it. Now, this is a, I don't know, a $20,000-$25,000 car, but with 440 miles on it, it sold for $67,500 before the VIG. With the fee, it's like $70,000. Is this car $70,000? All the value is in the low miles. It's a cool car, obviously presents well, but it's not a rare piece. My SAC car, they made 62 of, and it's number 50. That's a rare car.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
This is not a rare car, that rare of a car. And all the value is in the low miles. Like, what are we doing with rewarding the low miles maybe too much?
Here's what I've always thought about this, because this has been something in the collector car world forever. You know, it could be a 69 Camaro that was an SS, you know, 350 car, and it has 10 original miles on it. Then here comes a Copo Camaro, super rare. It's got the chambered exhaust, blah, blah, blah. And they're almost identical in price. Oh, wait a minute. Why is that? I think one of the big reasons is because people that aren't really, that really don't know cars as well, let's say they're not a seasoned collector, and let's use Fox Bodies for an example. Let's say we've got your SAC and we have a 5-liter black on black GT that has 20 miles on it. The guy who isn't a seasoned collector and knowledgeable, he can relate to low miles. He didn't take the time to learn that the other car is actually very low mileage and it's rarity. And I think more people just can reflect right on that. Oh, low miles. Yeah, that makes it worth more. Does it? Not in my opinion, because as I just said a minute ago, my Vega has 20,000 miles on it. For a 1971 Baldwin Motion Vega, that's super, super low. And it's, but I can still take it around the block every once in a while because it's not too low.
You bring up an interesting point. Like we walk around some of the higher end auctions. Brad, you've been out there a few times, not just Barrett Jackson, but Gooding and RM and
whatever.
And as those cars get older and they get restored, the miles become irrelevant. If you're buying a Lamborghini Miura, nobody's really questioning if the Miura has 80,000 miles or 34,000 miles. Like they're $2.5 million for like a Miura SV. Like that's it. And now people just go, oh, is it properly restored? Is it all numbers matching? Is it the right thing? You know, and who did the restoration? That all matters more. So yes, I kind of feel like in your example, do you go for the low mile stock Mustang GT or the higher mileage rare version of the Roush, the Saline, the SAC car, whatever? I think you go for the more rare car because the miles are going to, of course, on a low mile car, you can drive, literally drive the value away. You know, you could drive it a little bit. Yep. And every time you do, the value reduces significantly. But a rare enough car, you won't really drive the value away. Of course, if you're someone like Jay Leno, you have the luxury, of course, of being
restoring it back up.
Yeah. you get to drive it as much as you want and restore it back up. And you know the car is in one of the most prestigious collections of the world in the world. And, well, and he restores his cars back up. You know, so it's just
another point, Matt, is that what have we seen again and again with a Camaro or a Mustang or whatever the car might be? If it's not super rare, we see again and again, oh my God, they just pulled this Mustang GT out of a guy. He was a Ford dealer and he never sold this one. It only has 18 miles on it. Yeah. That has got to be the lowest. Then 10 years later, they just pulled another one out. It's got 20 miles. We see them again and again. We're still seeing them appear because there's not that rarity that accompanies them.
What about the perspective of, you know, you could say, well, it's a time capsule. Yeah, but it's a time capsule that's been sitting and not maintained and not exercised. Like you said, Brad, a car that's relative in the miles, it's like, oh, you could have a 71 Vega with 20,000 miles. That's considered low miles for its age. That car has been run and it's been, you know, exercised and it's in good condition. A car with no miles on it doesn't necessarily mean it's in good condition. It's in sitting
condition.
Especially
an 80s car.
Yeah. It's like
plastics.
It's like I'd rather have a reasonably low miles car that you can enjoy. Like Matt, you were saying too, you roll it around on dollies, afraid that you're going to put a tenth of a mile on it. I mean, that's no fun. And especially with the cars that aren't valued other than their low miles, it's silly. It's silly other than bragging rights to say I've got something with no miles.
I've never really owned a car prior to this one that I was concerned about, like how much I drove it. And I put 20 miles on it and it was fun to put 20 miles on it. But it doesn't really fit my character. At the end of the day, it was just like, I'm not having fun with the car. It was an investment car. And I was like, oh, am I going to be an investment car person? I think the answer to that's probably not going to be yes. It's just, I mean, it'd be nice to have cars you don't really lose money on. And this isn't really a car I'm going to lose money on, but I wasn't really kind of pulling my hair out about selling it because, you know, I've cleaned it. I drove it a little bit here and there, but it wasn't really something that I can really go out and enjoy. So yeah.
I know what you mean. It's like my Vega. I worry about putting miles, but I also worry about if I take it around the block, somebody hits me or if something happens to it, you know,
valuable, that's a big thing. Yeah.
But going back to the mileage factor, I think the other thing is time is what favors the rarity, because over time, rarity is always going to outsell and outvalue mileage, because as people start looking at them, and let's face it, as some of those cars drop away, there were 60 of those cars built, Matt? And we don't know how many are still wholly there, haven't been butchered up. It just keeps going up and up. It's like every time one of these Muras gets wrecked or a Enzo gets wrecked, it's like everybody, I always say everybody who owns one's going, mine is not worth more, you know?
And it's interesting because you look at the value of good race cars and, you know, something like Adam Carolla's 935, extremely valuable because it's one of the most raced 935s ever. It has more racing history and probably more racing miles than any 935 ever produced. We can always guarantee it. I'm pretty sure it's documented. Yeah. And so
race cars are unique in that respect.
Yeah. But I'm just saying when you're dealing with something as kind of volatile as mileage, I think there's so many other characteristics of the car that can create value that we mm-hmm. should look at before mileage.
Yeah, and lastly on that too, like my NAS Defender, it's got 128,000 miles on it. That's perfectly acceptable. It hasn't hurt the value of the car. It's been loved and it's in phenomenal condition. Our little Mini Cooper has 13,000 original miles on it. And I drive the shit out of that car. I consider it a daily because it's got low miles for what it is, but it's not going to hurt the value to put more on. It's a Mini. They made millions of them, you know, but it's got enough low miles that I can still put miles on it. I'm not hurting the value.
Steve, if we were uber wealthy, we could have costume cars. Like people have costume jewelry. We would have a duplicate built that's your drive. Yes. But it doesn't matter. Yes. Serial numbers aren't right and stuff. You know?
We talked about that with Cobras and about the D-Type Jaguar and about the 550 Porsches. We've talked about that. You have an original 550 Porsche. Yeah, you're not going to put miles in that car except for really exclusive showcasing deals, you know, Goodwood and things like that. But, you know, you have a really nice alloy body replica tribute car that's built to the spec of that car. Drive the shit out of it.
And this goes back to a special time when I was in high school and these cars were all just so plentiful still, and nobody even thought of a COPO 427 car or a, you know, even ZL1 Camaros were roaming the streets when I grew up. And it's like, what a special time, because they were still just cool cars, you know? And yeah, you wanted a SS 427 or you wanted a this, but you know, that was really cool. And I kind of wish it was still like that, because the value's nice, but boy, it sure was nice, you know, being able to just pick them up whenever you wanted. But
yeah.
But Matt, it's still for sale, right?
Yeah, it's,
if somebody
it's
wants
for
to
sale.
Get a hold of you, reach out and, you know, has that six-figure checkbook ready to go. We're ready to go. So
I'm ready to go.
Now, for six figures, would a case of Bravago find its way into the back?
You know, somebody even commented on the Bring a Trailer listing, and I said, of course, if anybody wants it, we've got hats and shirts and plenty of booze. We'll fill up the car with whatever you want.
You get into the eight figures, you might even get a coal company with it, you know? I mean,
For the right price, you could buy the whole company. You can buy it all. You can buy the car, you can buy the company, you can buy all of it. Everything's for sale.
Right.
That's good. I wish you would have been telling us that it closed today, but I'm sure if it's meant to sell, it's going to sell. So,
Yeah, look, it still has a chance to sell. Like I said, a few people have reached out. It would have been more fun to see it all on Bring a Trailer. And honestly, I like public sales because I think it helps the car community. And I'm a fan of the SAC Mustang. I want the other owners of their cars to see cars go up in value. And the only way that really happens is when there are public sales. And people all the time are like, I bought this car years ago for $40,000. I've been offered $100,000 and I keep turning it down. And I go, yeah, but were you offered it publicly? Did somebody bid on it? Because it doesn't really mean that much, you know, otherwise, you know. And so if this one sells, it sells. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But that's
We'll see what happens. If Matt comes on some week and he says, yeah, I don't have the car anymore, then we will know. So hey, I want to ask you guys something. In 24 and 2025, we're going to see more new electric cars from every major manufacturer becoming available. I mean, we can just go down the list, man. Cars, trucks, SUVs. But at the same time, we're seeing people pull back dramatically. All the major car companies and like this week, Fisker announced that they're running out of cash and they're laying off 15% of their entire workforce. Rivian announced that they're laying off 10%. And I mean, boy, I looked at their numbers, what they projected they would sell versus what they actually sold. These car companies are so far off. You know, with all this happening and with these you know, we may see attrition of the some of the companies even, but is the electric car ruining the automotive industry? Because it really is affecting Ford and GM and Chrysler and all these people. What do you guys think?
It just sales are slowing down. And it's, again, it was sort of this, not mandate, but this pressure from the government to really lean into EV development. And as the car companies, I don't want to say embraced it, but because they were sort of forced into it.
Yeah, they didn't.
Some of them embraced it. As they started getting into it, they're starting to realize it's a fine option to have, but it's not necessarily realistic for all of these car companies. Fisker, unfortunately, as an example that you gave, when they said they're running out of cash, they don't have enough cash to sustain the company unless they start picking up sales and really cutting expenses.
And they're talking to some other partners possibly.
Yeah. So they've got some work to do. Some of the more traditional car companies like Mercedes, who said, you know, we're going to be an all electric lineup by 2030. They're backtracking on that completely. They're like, no, that's not necessarily going to be our plan anymore. And they're investing in their gas engine cars again, which honestly are way prettier than their electric cars and seem to be working quite a bit better.
Well, we're seeing a lot of reasons for this. We have all collectively been talking for over 4 years now about how the infrastructure, now the general public's talking about the infrastructure is not there to sustain that. Not only that, the grid's not there to sustain everyone driving electric cars. And then added to that, we keep seeing these stories pop up in the popular press about a guy who had his BMW battery go out and it was $80,000 to replace it. I heard about some guy who had a Ferrari LaFerrari.
Only one guy? One guy?
You know,
we keep hearing this and it's all of that starts going, maybe we're putting the cart before the horse here, the volt before the...
By going all in on the one technology, because there's potential for hydrogen, there's some e-fuels that are still being developed in racing right now. And Aaron, you'd mentioned the cool looking sort of old school Land Rover, the Ineos.
The Ineos, which is just announced a hybrid. I'd be fully into that.
So that guy there, because I was talking to Alistair Weaver from Edmunds. We talked about it on CarCast. Alistair was talking to the guy and he's the billionaire guy that kind of put it all together. And he's like, I want an old school Land Rover, but I kind of want a new version. I'm just going to build a car. And he's like, you're going to build a car. And he goes, yeah. And I'm going to make it hydrogen powered. And he goes, oh, that seems weird. And he goes, well, where do you think there's an infrastructure for hydrogen? And he said, yes, my company Ineos is the largest provider of hydrogen in the country in
wow.
Europe. It goes, so he owns an energy company, petroleum hydrogen company, and making the car, which was confusing to me at first. I was like, I don't know who's making this. It's like ExxonMobil making a car.
Yeah.
He's like, because the guy he was kind of a quiet, like under the radar billionaire. And now he's all over the place.
Like Apple making an electric car. I mean, come on.
Yeah, kind of. But now he's kind of all over the place. And he's like, I'm building what I liked and it can be hydrogen powered because I own the company that makes
the hydrogen. Follow me around.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So they're a corner of the market.
There is a thought process behind what he was doing there.
Yeah, brilliant.
Well, I'm glad because he's spending a lot of money.
A lot of money, but he's got a lot of money. By the way, he spent money on like
a car.
Like part of Manchester United and some other things. He's out there spending money.
I have three buddies who have Ineos Grenadiers, and they have a couple small problems, but it's just new car woes. But conservative, it's a great vehicle, and our friends at OK Four Wheel Drive are tricking them out, and my friend Brian's tricking his out of Goose Gear, everybody's working on them right now, and they're taking the modifications really well. And I don't hear any of those guys complaining about their rides. They're loving them. They're like, this thing's great. Nobody loves.
Where are they sold? Pardon? Where are they sold? Where are they getting them?
These were all premier orders. So they, you know, I gave up my allocation, which I don't regret, but at the same time, it would have been nice to still have it. So they were just early allocations that they're starting to get them now. They're starting to deliver them. Everybody's liking them. They seem to be pretty capable. Just nobody likes a little BMW shifter. It's like, what is this doing here? Someone will 3D print something else.
are they making them here? Or are they making them in Europe?
I think they were making them overseas. That's what I was wondering. Where do you take delivery here in the States? Is what I was trying to get.
That's a good question.
A certain dealer network, or do they just deliver them?
I think they make them in France. I think they bought a Mercedes-Benz plant that was in France.
Yeah. I think you're right. I can't believe I missed all this. I'm drawing a blank right now. Well, I'm also looking at a 1957 Jaguar D-Type that is for sale.
Keep your eye on the ball. We're doing the show here.
I'm a little distracted.
Anybody flying out of LAX soon?
Nope.
Delta.
Nope. What's going on?
Well, if you're a Diamond Delta member or a 360 member, you may get selected for one of their mystery cars to run you to your plane. And their mystery car is a 911 GT3 RS, bright red with the big wing. And Matt and I were talking right before the show started about how you do have to meet their qualifications. You have to fit in the car, you have to be light on luggage, and be traveling alone.
It's weird.
We had this going for years, and we never heard about it until now. It started in Atlanta, and Porsche teamed up with Delta to get people who are their premier customers, if they're running late, get them off one plane right on the tarmac and run them across to their next flight. And they use 918 Spiders, they use Cayennes, the Macans, and Panameras. But LAX actually has this 911 GTRS. Of course not. Of course we have that at LAX, right?
Yeah.
How bummed would you be if you were like Shaq and they said, hey, we're going to run you. And he's like, I can't fit in that car, man.
it's
well, that's why they have quick release seat releases. So you can just take the seat out.
Porsche has plenty of really fast SUVs, you know, and if you were at the Wynn and they have a fleet of Rolls Royce, you know, vehicles or something, it seems a little bit, you know, big trunk, plenty of room, still fast. Like, interesting that Porsche was the partner on this, but
yeah, Porsche jumped in on it, and they call it a mystery service because there's not, apparently they select you. You don't select it. Like they said, if you are one of those members, you can pay $500 extra to have this Swift service, as they call it, to take you across the tarmac when you arrive. And they said, it could be a golf cart. It doesn't necessarily be that it's a Porsche. So yeah. I know what would happen to me. I don't know about you guys, but I'd pay $500 and this guy'd pull up in a little golf cart with the little bimini top and go, all right, let's get you to your flight, Mr. Banchon. We'd be going across the tarmac, plane thrust, going, blowing my luggage off. And, you know,
yeah, I'm sorry, the Porsche would blow by you.
Yeah, the Porsche would blow by me and Matt would be in there listening. My hair would be blowing sideways because of the thrust. Matt's would be blown because of the air conditioner, you know? I'd get on the flight all ruffled and be treading back to my seat and Matt would be sitting there in first class with his champagne because
why are you driving 35 in second gear? Well, it's not warm yet.
Yeah.
The Porsche is cold.
But I try to stay away from LAX with a passion. If I don't have to fly out of there, I don't. But next time I do, because international flights you usually have to, I will be looking for a 911 GT3 RS because it's bright red and it says Delta on the door.
So did you guys see the little video I posted when we got on Dad's plane? Speaking of planes and airports, when we got on Dad's plane and there was that cool sunset shot through the window and all that.
Yeah.
Did you see that? I got a notification last night from Facebook. It's at 106,000 views.
Wow.
Like what? Like, how did that happen? Isn't that weird?
I thought you were going to say you got to notice that they said it didn't meet FAA standards or something.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Misha just texted me. I missed it. Austin Hanks is the other guitarist on Billy Gibbons' trio. So yes. Austin Hanks, just a little follow up. I want to make sure to give him some love because he's badass. Thanks, honey. I missed that.
Got anything else, guys? Otherwise, we can wrap it up for this week.
Yeah, I think we're gonna wrap it up.
I got a needy dog that wants to get on my lap because he went to the vet today. So, yeah.
I saw him walking around in the background.
Yeah, he got a couple shots today, so he's kind of mopey. He's kind of mopey.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up. So, Matt, where can they find us online?
Check us out at shiftandsteer.com. You can follow me at Moderator on all the social media things.
Aaron, are you online yet?
Yeah, I'm online. You can find me at Aaron Hagar. And if you check out my Facebook, I got a video that's running about 106,000 views.
There you
right
go.
Now.
Hey,
thank you.
Aaron, there's a little bit of snow up in Tahoe. Do you miss it?
No, yeah, we got about 6 or 8 inches last night, but
it's supposed to get dumped this week.
Yeah, if the forecast is at all accurate, it's coming by the foot in the next couple days, so we should have a lot of snow.
Like 10 feet, like a record snowfall. It's like crazy.
We'll see. The last time they said that, I left King of the Hammers like pedal to the metal to get home in time, and we got 3 inches, so who knows.
Who knows? All right, everybody, find me, visit me on Instagram at Bradley_Fanshawe. And of course, if you need some wheels for trucks, cars, golf carts, hot rods, exotics, you name it, we can build them right here at our factory in Anaheim. It's Bond Speed Wheels on Instagram or our website.
Where's Win Brad's stuff?
Man, I haven't had time to do Win Brad's stuff in a while. I've been just trying to sell wheels. It's that time of year where it's a weird time of year in the wheel industry where, you know, you come out of winter, and they're still like thinking, yeah. And then all of a sudden everybody wakes up at the same time and they want them yesterday. So right now is a good time to be buying. So ring us up. So
All right.
We'll be back next week with another great show. And that's a promise, not a threat.
Not a threat.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.